This time in the Magic Kitchen, we are joined by author Celeste Larson.
I'm Leander Witchwood.
And I'm Elise Wells.
And welcome to the Magic Kitchen podcast, where we talk about magic, kitchen witchcraft, herbs,
and everything in between.
So September is already winding to an end.
I know.
It went so fast.
I can't believe we're almost into October. So we're in Samhain shadow work season.
Oh, yeah.
And this is, for me, this is when like things ramp up. Like I really start getting active until about Yule, till the holidays are over. And then I kind of chill out and I go within. And so I have the Rebel Mistake Method coming up in October. And this is where witches get to work, and I love it. I'm so excited for it. I have the workbook. I have, you know, the class that's coming up. We also have the Ancestral Magic Summit coming up, where we're both presenters in that. I'm really excited about that. I have a whole Healing the Mother Line course going through that summit, and I hope people sign up for that, because I think it's going to be really one of those things that you get into with this time of year, and you know, you take it with you, and it works, and you can work with it and use it every day. I love it.
Mm-hmm. And ancestral magic, for that summit, I will be presenting on Lauraria altars. They're an ancient Greek and Roman practice, very similar to our modern day ancestor altar. So you guess you could say it's the ancestor of the ancestor altar. And looking at the historical uses for those altars and the different types of Lauris or ancestors that we can work with. So it's a really exciting mini course that I'm presenting. And it's so nice. Like Leandra and I are among 24 other practitioners for that summit.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a huge, like it's, I think, 3 full days, if not, it's at least 2. It's a weekend event, but I think some stuff starts on the Friday. Yeah. And it is
On the 3rd.
The 3rd of November. So you've got plenty of time to sign up if you're listening to this before 3rd and 4th of November 2023. And we will put a link in the show notes for you to sign up to the Ancestor Magic Summit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited.
My September has been really exciting.
You've been sick.
Well, I went to the Jane Austen Festival in England and got extremely sick. And it is now on day 13 and it is still not working its way through, which is annoying. But more excitingly, I have had record tarot reading numbers, which has been amazing.
Yes.
I've been booked out like 2 weeks straight. So if you're interested in getting a tarot reading, don't hesitate, because it's really filling up very quickly. And it's just been so incredible. Like the testimonials that are coming through, the experiences that people are having, it's just been so, so powerful. And actually just last night, I hosted a workshop on becoming an intuitive tarot reader, an introduction for anybody interested in that path of tarot reading. So if you missed it, you can actually purchase it from my Patreon shop. So you don't have to be a member of Patreon to shop in the store. So you can check that out. And actually, if you're interested in joining my Patreon, if you join by October 6th, everybody gets a free Magical Living with Nature workbook. This is a workbook derived from my masterwork course, Magical Living Every Day. And it is taking the best of the best features of that course and incorporating them for you to start working, whether you've been practicing your witchcraft for a very long time or you're super new to actively practicing. This is the workbook for you. And it's totally free if you join at the initiate tier or higher. So if you're already a member, you're going to get it. It's going to come right to you. If you're not, now's the time to sign up. And you can even sign up for that tier with a free trial to check it out and see if it's for you.
Very cool.
So I hope you'll join us. Yeah. It's really happening over here. We're doing some amazing stuff.
We are. Yeah, definitely check our links because we have so much going on, both of us, like each of us independently and together. We do so much together and independently, like within our communities and the, you know, courses. And yeah, I stumble over it because I'm like, I do so much. Like people ask me, what do you do? Oh, well, what don't I do?
Yeah.
I don't
know. Yeah, it's funny because we get that question so much. How can I learn with you? And the answer is, how can't you? Because we're doing so many
options.
And it's self-led. Yeah. There's live meetings.
Yeah.
We do it all because we want this to be, like we always say, your witchcraft path is your own. We do what we can to make it accessible and not feel overwhelming, because it shouldn't be. It's just about getting up and practicing. And our resources here to
one of the things
that
I think
overwhelm.
Absolutely. Yeah, the resources are there for you to do the work. And in order for witchcraft to work, you have to do the work. It's not something that any of us can just hand to you and say, oh, here, you know, plug and play. I mean, we do have a lot of that where, you know, the workbooks and that sort of thing, and the self-paced courses, the live events, those help keep you motivated. But you have to do the work. So getting involved and signing up for the communities and taking the courses that we offer, that's what gets you. Get your foot in the door so you can do the work and get your magic flowing. I love it. It's exciting. The Magic Kitchen Podcast is funded and supported by thewitchwoodteahouse.com, offering a variety of hand-blended loose leaf teas as well as loose herbs for all of your ritual, spell work, wellness, and everyday enjoyment needs. If you would like to support this podcast while sipping a great cup of tea, head over to thewitchwoodteahouse.com and find the magic that's in store for you.
Celeste Larson is a pagan witch, writer, ritualist, and retreat facilitator. She authors the blog Mage by Moonlight, where she writes about a range of esoteric topics, including folk magic, paganism, polytheism, animism, ancestor veneration, ritual practice, magical self-healing, and more. Her personal practice weaves together threads of various ancestral traditions, focusing on Nordic and Celtic spirituality and magic. Celeste's first book, Heal the Witch Wound, Reclaim Your Magic and Step into Your Power, was just released in April 2023. Originally from the United States, she currently resides in beautiful County Cork, Ireland. Welcome, Celeste.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
And I really appreciate meeting another expat American. We've talked about this before, but that spiritual call to spirit of place is, you just can't deny it sometimes. And it's so hard to get that empowered energy to take such a big step as moving outside of your home country. So I really admire you for doing that. And I'm glad I found a kindred spirit in that. Actually, speaking of Ireland, we just had the Athens Irish Festival here. And it was amazing. Like, we flew out, I'm one of the founders of the Athens Irish Society here. So we flew out some musicians to play at the festival. And it was really interesting how similar like Greek and Irish culture is. Like, they're both so community driven. They both want to just dance. Their music's very similar. Their instruments are similar. Like, we also have a bagpipes like instrument, like the Uilleann pipes. And we also have the same drum as like the Bodhran. It's like exactly the same. Even like the bouzouki is similar to Irish like guitar playing. So it was so interesting. Like, I knew it would be a fun festival, but it was very like, it was like families coming together. It was really
That's
nice.
Cool.
That's so cool. I love that. I remember seeing that on your Instagram and thinking that was like an interesting, you know, combination of the Irish festival and in Greece, but that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really fun. And I got to read tarot there, which was really unexpected because it was, you know, Greece is a bit old fashioned. And actually, that's a question I have for you. How is the craft in Ireland? Are there other practitioners you've been able to connect with? Is there any community?
Yeah, it's interesting. So definitely there's a community here of spiritual people, of people reviving Irish traditional practices and practicing witchcraft, practicing magic, practicing paganism, connecting with the earth. But they do it in a way that I haven't really personally seen it in many other places, where it's very integrated with Christianity and kind of modern religion. So you see this a lot at the holy wells or the sacred wells around Ireland, which, as everyone knows, they have very old pagan roots, where these were sacred sites for a very, very long time. And they continued to be sacred sites after Ireland became Christianized as well. And so you still see people visiting them today for Imbolc or Brigid's Day. This year, I went to Kildare, where St. Brigid was from, and it's associated with the goddess Brigid as well. And one of her main Brigid's wells is there in Kildare. And there were so many different people at this well with crosses and collecting water to take for their gardens. And you definitely saw, you could tell like who was there for St. Brigid and who was there for Goddess Brigid. but everyone kind of acknowledged that both were an important part of Ireland's history. And I thought that was so interesting and beautiful that it really is very integrated. And I think that in a lot of ways, that's why Ireland's rich spiritual history is really kept alive the way that it is, because people don't feel that they have to erase the pagan past, even though they're Christian today, that they can incorporate both traditions into their lives and into their belief systems. And of course, awesome. You do have a modern pagan community here as well. And that's been great to connect with.
Yeah. That's awesome. Oh, that's really good. Yeah. And Ireland really held out against the Christians. Like they kept practicing for a good bit. I want to say like 600 AD is really when like the first signs of, because even St. Patrick, like the St. Patrick we think of, if I remember correctly, he came here, tried to evangelize, and got his ass kicked out, and then he came back because he had to get reinforcements. He was like,
oh geez. I like to see how the evolution of the two paths merge and how they become, I don't know if it's one, but they become more cohesive and accepting of one another. I think that's an important element that I like to see when we're looking at the evolution of our paths, because what was traditional doesn't always apply to the modern day, and modern witchcraft is going to evolve. And I like how you mentioned that, like, they are still accepting of one another. They, you know, maybe not, I don't know, like here it feels like we're almost tolerated, but not quite, if that makes sense, like the cultural contrast.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think that it is important to kind of keep in mind that modern witchcraft and paganism, it's a living tradition, and we are breathing our own new life into old traditions, and things are going to continue to evolve and adapt and progress. And that's what's going to keep these traditions alive into the future. And however, you know, however it works for each of us to incorporate them, whatever religious or spiritual backgrounds we came from coming into this, that's ways that we can make it work for us, just as people have always done. Like, paganism and witchcraft have always been about the people practicing them, and they've always used what works for them and leave what doesn't.
How do you see that playing into the topic of your book, Healing the Witch Wound, when we look at the acceptance, or perhaps for some listeners, non-acceptance within the wider community of their practices?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And I think it's something that probably any of us who identify as witches or pagans or an alternative kind of spirituality have wrestled with at some point. Because, you know, we do walk a path that is different than the norm, and we may walk a path that is different from that of our families, the religions that we were raised with and the belief systems that we were raised with. And it may be different from many of our friends and our wider community as well. So really finding that sense of community within witchcraft and paganism can be so healing, to connect with people who share similar points of view and beliefs, and to learn from them, and just to realize that you are not the only one who thinks the way that you do, and you're not the only one who feels the way about the world that you do. And I think many people often describe finding paganism and witchcraft as a sort of sense of coming home. That's how I experienced it, at least. And even after kind of stumbling into this world, I certainly still struggled with that sense of not belonging and of not wanting to open up about my beliefs to others because I didn't want to be labeled as weird or crazy or evil. And being a person on the internet, I've certainly heard it all before, but it does really help having that sense of community.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so isolating, honestly, the way, it's different for all of us. Like, there's places in every country that are still less accepting, or like, within our families too. Like, the broom closet conversation is a challenge because people talk about it, like, are you in or out of the broom closet? But that's not even, it's not that simple. Like I'm out of the broom closet, but I don't bring it up around very many people in the wide world. You know, it's something that I'll talk to my friends about, my family in limited terms. Obviously my husband knows about it all, but there's so many barriers still that I keep up personally. So sometimes people ask me that, they're like, you know, how do you come out of the broom closet? I'm like, you come out all the time. Like, people just or may not know, in maybe you think they do and they don't. And you're like, oh crap, I have to have this conversation again.
Yeah, definitely.
No, that's really true. And, you know, it kind of is something that is always unfolding. And I think that's okay. This is something that I wrote about in my book as well. For myself, there really was never one big coming out moment where I stood up and told everyone in my life that I'm a witch and I'm a pagan. It's more been about gradually opening up and letting people see more of me, because they've always had little glimpses, you know, like, oh, they know that I have crystals around my house, or they know that I use herbs to cleanse my home energetically. But to put that label on it, especially a word like witch, which has so many negative connotations, can really be a lot for people. And so, yeah, just kind of letting myself be seen more, which I make it sound like it's something simple and easy, and it's definitely not. But over time, you can kind of work up to it. And I don't think it has to be a big coming out moment. It certainly can if you have found your path and you feel very sure about it and you want to, and you are sick of hiding in the broom closet and you just want to shout it from the rooftops. And absolutely, I support that and celebrate that. But for myself, it was kind of an unfolding as I discovered more of who I was. And above all, just realized I didn't want to hide myself anymore. And I didn't want to believe that I was less than, or that there was something wrong with me. And so I needed to stop treating myself that way and let myself express all of the parts of me, and people can take it or leave it, whether they know what labels I use for myself or not.
I can totally relate with that. I remember when I was first getting myself introduced to this path, my sister and I were doing the research, and we were coming home from the grocery store one day and we were talking about different religions. So we had been studying Buddhism, we had been studying Taoism, atheism, all of it, like every ism out there. We were doing a bunch of research on it. And I think it's a prime example of like how we can be so ingrained into something, but then our minds can be changed. Because in this ride home, we're pulling up to our apartment and we were talking about the different religions we were trying to connect with, trying to find that connection, that coming home, like you talked about. And my sister said, what about Wicca? And I'm like, what the hell is Wicca? I hadn't even heard about it at this point, you know? And this is me, 19 years old, actually 18 years old, coming off of being a missionary in my church for many, many years. So the idea that witchcraft is devil worship and is evil was deeply ingrained. And as soon as she started explaining what it was and that it was basically witchcraft, I said, oh my God, that's devil worship. I'm out. And I literally hopped out of the car. She like couldn't even put it in park fast enough. I hopped out of the car, left her with all the groceries and stomped into the house. Like, I was so convinced that
this path, Wicca, witchcraft, was devil worship. I didn't even want to hear it. I couldn't even hear it. And then, you know, here I am almost 30 years later. Very different path. So I think when we talk about the witch wound, I want to know, can you express to us some of the common manifestations of that witch wound? I think in women it comes up most often, but what are your experiences? What can you identify as a witch wound in someone, and maybe give us some suggestions on how to address that in our lives?
Yeah, there's so many ways that the witch wound can show up, which can in some ways make it kind of hard to identify. I think as you begin this work and you dive more into it, there's so many aha moments of like, yep, that's my witch wound being triggered. And okay, this is something else for me to focus on. But in general, the witch wound is a spiritual wound that relates to the burning times, as they were often called, or the witch craze at the end of the medieval period into the early modern era, when the most witches were, or people accused of witchcraft were executed in Europe, of more than any other time in history. And so that's where this wound stems from. And it shows up today being passed down ancestrally, being passed on spiritually, and also kept alive in our culture. So there's so many different facets of the witch wound, and that can kind of impact how it's showing up in your spirit, how it's showing up in your body, how it's showing up in your family lines. But really at its core, I would say the witch wound is about a fear of being seen and a fear of expressing yourself, especially when it relates to spirituality and intuition and emotions. It's really this fear that you're going to be rejected or possibly even harmed if you share your truths, if you share your feelings about something, and especially if you open up about being different or other in some way, because that's really what the witch hunts were about. We certainly have records of people who practiced folk magic, people who were healers and herbalists. But we also have a lot of evidence pointing to the fact that the people who were executed in the witch trials were not witches. They were women who had accumulated wealth or land, and people didn't like that. Or on the opposite end of the spectrum, they were women who did not have wealth or land or power. And so they would often beg and ask their neighbors for help, and people didn't like that either. And so this was a way of taking away power from people who seemed to have too much, and of silencing people who were asking for help. And we also have instances of people who were not Christian. Jewish people were disproportionately harmed during the witch trials. So it's really about an otherness wound, is how I would describe it, of having too many emotions, of standing out too much, of expressing your needs, and of not fitting in with the norm, of not kind of keeping your head down and staying in line. And of course, that can show up in so many different ways. Really just feeling unsafe with being yourself, feeling unsafe with charging money for your spiritual services, because that's something that we saw a lot during the witch trials as well, where, as I said, it was people, especially women, who had too much money. But in the case of healers and herbalists and midwives, often what we saw happening was people would say, oh, well, if you can heal, then you can harm too. And so you must be making the rest of the villagers sick so that you can keep your healing business afloat. And these would be the kinds of accusations that were launched to get them. So essentially, they were being accused of being frauds and of scamming people and of making people sick and of harming people. So many different ways that the witch wound can manifest. But I would say, in terms of healing the witch wound, it's really about first and foremost being present with what you're feeling, because that's going to be the thread that you can follow to lead you to the more specific healing work that's going to help you. So to give To give an example, something that I've always really struggled with is speaking up and using my voice. It's always been really hard for me, kind of figuratively and literally, to speak publicly and also just to express my truth, to express my needs. Like, definitely a history of people pleasing and weak boundaries, and all of that can be very much related to the witch wound. So for myself, I have really focused a lot of my healing on my throat energy center and on singing and chanting and breath work. And also, yes, on practicing setting boundaries and saying what I'm feeling, like saying no when I mean no. And all of that has been really, really healing for me. So it depends kind of on what you feel is coming through for you, and following that to lead you to those supportive practices.
Yeah, that's great. And I couldn't help think, like, when you were talking about how this witch wound shows up in our own modern pagan witchcraft communities, how, you know, witches criticizing witches and trying to keep certain witches small or bolstering other witches and having this divide in our own community, which I think plays back into that ancient, I guess it's ancient now, but that ancient play for power. If you can keep them divided, you can control. If you can keep them feeling small, it's control. And, you know, psychology has identified this, and I think witches innately, like, we understand it. So I'm always looking at the shadow work aspect of working the witch wound and working the wounds within ourselves. Is that something that you would recommend?
Oh, definitely. And I mean, I think in terms of that, in terms of judgment within the witch community, definitely shadow work. Like, shadow work often brings up these realizations about how often what we feel uncomfortable with in other people usually ties into things that we feel uncomfortable with in ourselves. So sometimes when, you know, if we see someone in the witchy pagan community who we feel like is, I don't know, like too out there, like maybe they're too outspoken, they're saying too much, and that is triggering for us. Maybe that relates to some kind of fear that we have about speaking up and about sharing our truth. And we feel like you shouldn't be doing that. You know, it's keeping you down and it's causing judgment towards other people. So it's so healing to do shadow work, because it just helps you to accept what is alive within yourself and what's wanting to be expressed within yourself. And it does also make you more tolerant and compassionate for other people as well. So it's incredibly healing to engage in that kind of work and to find acceptance for those shadowy parts of yourself and let them see the light a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree with that. I love it. I love it when you know the solutions. We all know our solutions. We know how to heal ourselves. I think it's within our bones. It's within our intuition. But to hear it out loud and to affirm it together, that's why community is so important, and coming together is so important. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, just hearing from other people who are going from the same things and who are struggling with similar issues and have maybe overcome certain problems that you're currently working through. And community it's so great. And it's so important for that, to just feel supported. Cause like you said, healing, it's not necessarily groundbreaking work. Like, there's not some deep secrets that people need to discover about how to heal themselves. It just really takes time, and you have to be patient and give yourself grace and acknowledge that you're probably going to come back to the same lessons again and again. I talk about this in my book, and I'm certainly not the first person to describe it this way. But I like to think of healing as a spiral, and it's a spiral path of healing that you walk. And so as you progress along your personal journey, you gain some distance from these kind of core wounds that you have, but with time, you're going to circle back to them and you're going to encounter them, but you're going to have new perspective and new tools at your disposal. And maybe you won't get quite as triggered when this same thing comes up again, and you'll know that you're healing, and it's just not a linear process. But that's okay. That's life. Nothing really in nature is that linear.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The spiral is a big theme for me too, in my practice and in the tradition I'm initiated in as well. And I think it's a great illustration of the path, but also it could be a really healing thing to walk a labyrinth, whether there's a physical one you can go to or to just create one in the pattern of your steps. And you know, my thing is spirits of place and visiting sacred places, but so many of them, no matter what culture you're in, are spirals, are mazes, are labyrinthine. And I don't think that's a mistake. I think there is something very real in the act of doing something with our physical body that our spiritual self is doing internally.
That's so true. And kind of bringing it full circle, there is actually a labyrinth here in Cork City where I live, on the grounds of this cathedral. And they have a little sign in front of it saying that, you know, it's an ancient tradition and that labyrinths have been around for a long time, that it's an ancient symbol, and that it's been around since before Christianity, but it's been used by, you know, like monks and other people as they reflect on different sources of wisdom as they walk along the labyrinth. So they have this labyrinth at this beautiful cathedral, which I love visiting. I love walking around the cemetery there, but it's just so nice to go and walk in the labyrinth. And I like to sometimes choose a certain issue that I'm wrestling with at the time, and I reflect on that as I walk in, and it really feels like this sense of like rebirth when you come out the end again. And just having that space to kind of untangle your thoughts and work through things a little bit, even if you don't have a solution when you emerge from the labyrinth, which I often don't. It's a short walk, but it feels very healing to do that. And I think that's exactly what you're saying. There's something about the physical kind of mirroring the spiritual, and, you know, as above, so below, and yeah, the different levels of that happening.
Yeah, exactly. I actually have a story about a labyrinth. I was young. I was like maybe 14, maybe 15. So before I started my formal training, but when I went to this park, it's called Winterthur in Delaware, and it's still my favorite place to visit in the US. I go every chance I get when I'm back. And they have this like fairy garden, and it's, you know, for kids, but I pretty much only ever see adults hanging out there because it's so magical. Like, they've really did such a good job, like cultivating a natural environment. And they had a labyrinth there. And I just like on a whim on my own, left my family somewhere else. They were doing something else. And I walked this labyrinth alone. And I remember getting to the end, and I really do remember the feeling of completing it. It was so grounding and peaceful. And I just stood there and I looked back and I was like, did I go through a portal? Like, that was my first, like, you know, untrained witch's mind thought.
Wow. Yeah, it is like a portal. Oh, that's awesome that you picked up on that, like, as a child. It's amazing.
Yeah. And I think of that too with the witch's path. Like, we are always spiraling back to the things we did know as a child. Like, I found when I was cleaning out my childhood bedroom a while ago, I found a wand I had made when I was like 3 or 4 years old, because I remember making it as soon as I found it. I was like, oh my gosh, but I hadn't remembered it until that moment of holding it again, you know, or like being a kid and making potions with dead leaves and twigs and grass. There's just so many things that we intuitively know are grounding and healing to do. And sometimes we're just relearning that.
Yeah, absolutely. I just had this kind of remembering of something like that the other day, because I was feeling a bit carsick, and I got so carsick as a kid all the time. And something I used to do when I was young, I'm not sure what age, like probably 8 or so, because I feel like that was like the peak of when I would would get really sick whenever I was in the car. And something I would do was I would visualize inhaling the swirling, sparkling white light and breathing it into my stomach and exhaling all of the nausea, which I visualized as like a green swirling mass, I guess. And I would do that. I would like breathe in white light and exhale green light. And nobody taught me that. Like nobody in my family was studying that kind of thing. And it's still a practice that I use today for like healing myself and helping myself feel better.
It is so,
yeah, it's just
like, I had the same thing. I was super nauseous as a kid and airplanes were the worst for me. And like, I just flew a lot as a kid because we lived overseas. I was an expat kid for a while. And I would do the same thing. I had this visualization practice where I would sit there and I would picture the clouds like healing me, like breathing them in and using them as like their purity. Cause I remembered learning in science class that like clouds are water and vapor and all that. So I was like, okay, they're the purest form of water and their air. And that together is going to keep me from getting sick right now. Like, that's what I would do. I would like picture bringing in the elements like that.
That's amazing. Kids are honestly amazing. Just so smart, so much wisdom.
Oh, it's so crazy to think about. And we had on a guest talking about pagan parenting a little while ago. Mm-hmm. And I was telling a non-pagan friend of mine that we had this episode. And they were like, well, did you talk about like how like nobody should be raised in a religious tradition? Because that's a big thing too. Like, I think it's Stephen Fry who said there's no such thing as a Christian child. There's a child with Christian parents. And like, I do agree with that. And we did talk about that in the episode. But I said to her, I was like, when we talk about like incorporating pagan events for children, what we're doing is like having an egg hunt that's not religiously themed. So that they still get all the candy and all the fun and all the nature, but you know, it's just for the sake of being in nature, or it's for having them go walk a labyrinth, or taking them to the sea and helping them feel the currents when it passes, noticing each fish as it goes by. Like, there's so much in what we do that is intuitive. But I think if we have kids, like I don't have kids, I don't know that I ever will, but I often think like, these are the, like when I have moments like that, where I notice each of the individual fish, or I see one with a bigger spot than the other. And I'm like, oh, that's so nice. Like those moments of pure presence with nature. Like those are the kind of things I would want a kid to notice too. You know, that would be to me, like teaching paganism, if there is such a thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it's about. Like of any age, kid or adult, it's about being present and appreciating and celebrating the natural world and living in harmony with the cycles of the sun and the moon and feeling the presence of the land spirits, the plant and animal spirits, like, and kids just do that naturally. So I don't have kids either, but I do have a lot of friends with kids, and I worked as a nanny when I was going to school. And I kind of think to teach a kid paganism, you don't really have to do anything. I feel like kids are kind of just drawn to that naturally and they just do it.
Right.
Yeah. Just foster that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing listening to you guys intuitively using air magic to, to help with nausea. It makes sense, but nobody had to teach you that. Nobody had to instruct you. You just knew it. You knew to do it.
Yeah. It just felt right. Like you needed to do something so I wouldn't get sick again in the car. And mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like survivalist magic, which brings us all the way back to our ancestors in these witch trials, because I think that was why they got caught. And that's what is amazing to me. I was listening to an interview with Ronald Hutton, and he was talking about the witch trials, and he said what people need to recognize is that at no point during this, even when entire villages had their women decimated, like to the point where the villages stopped existing after the trials, within 5-year periods, they watched every woman get killed in certain villages in Germany. At no point did anyone actually stop practicing midwifery. He said there was never not midwives available. And if that isn't the true spirit of the witch, being a healer against all odds in the face of that much adversity, I thought that was so powerful.
Yeah, that is powerful.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's just the calling. Yeah, just what they and what we still feel like we need to practice in spite of all of the people out there who would have something to say about it. Yeah, we're still here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't see us going anywhere anytime soon.
No, I think we're
making a big comeback.
Exactly. We're just getting started.
Yes, I agree.
Somebody said to me, because I give tours of Greece, like for pagans. And one of the people that was on a tour with me, she was like, do you ever wish you could just go back in time and live in ancient Greece? I said, actually, I don't. Like, especially as a woman. And that's for a whole host of reasons. But also, we live in a time now where we can practice the craft much more freely without economic barriers, without class barriers. Even in ancient Greece, there was a lot of class barriers to magic. And that's another topic too. But, and without a limit to our community potentials, the internet is an incredible force of what we can do. And we also have the mobility that no one has ever had in human history. And we also have a more, for better and definitely worse, we have more people than ever. So there's actually more pagans today in, I forget what continent. I think if they included Hinduism, there are more pagans today than there ever were in human history and all time.
What? I did not know that.
Yeah. And even Delphi, they have a plaque and they don't allude to paganism, of course, because Greece is 98% Greek Orthodox, but they have a plaque that says every year, 1.4 million pilgrims come to Delphi. That is more pilgrims than came to Delphi in the time of the Athens hegemony, which is like the time when all the temples were at their peak.
Wow.
Wow. I mean, I guess it makes sense with, you know, population growth. And yeah, as you said, the internet, that's the first thing I thought about. Like, ideas can spread so much more easily and it's easier to find teachers. It's easier to find resources like books. If we don't have a bookstore that stocks that kind of thing near us, we can download witchy books on our Kindle. Mm-hmm. And
that's my lifeline.
It's so, yes, definitely. It's so accessible.
Absolutely. It's
incredible.
Yeah. You may have noticed that here at the Magic Kitchen Podcast, we don't have sponsored ads. That's because this is a fully listener-supported show. We do what we do for you, dear listener, and when you join my magical living community on Patreon, you're supporting all the time and energy that goes into setting up podcast interviews, writing articles and rituals, my paranormal mystery novel, and all that I do. And in exchange, you're getting over 10 exclusive journal prompts, rituals, witch tip videos, meditations, and more each month. If you love this podcast, consider joining my magical space. I can't wait to meet you and be an even bigger part of your magical journey. Go to patreon.com/Elise Wells or follow the link in the show notes. All right. So do you want to tell listeners where they can find you and your book?
Yeah. So my book is Heal the Witch Wound, and it is available everywhere books are sold. If you have a favorite local bookstore or a favorite witchy store that you go to, ask if they have it. But it's also on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Target, places like that. And I'm everywhere online as Mage by Moonlight, Instagram, don't really use Twitter these days, TikTok, Facebook, and my website is magebymoonlight.com. So that's where I post my latest happenings and offerings.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you very much. This was a great conversation. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been so nice chatting with you both.
You're welcome. Hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Yes, I would love that.
Have a great day.
Merry meet.
Merry part.
And merry meet again.
Thank you for joining us on the Magic Kitchen Podcast. Please visit my website, leandrawitchwood.com, for news, information, and more episodes.
I'm Elise Wells, and I can be found at Seeking Numina on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, and seekingnumina.com. That's Seeking, N-U-M-I-N-A.